It is Friday, July 28th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, North Korea launches another ballistic missile. Russia orders the United States to reduce its diplomatic staff.
It affects U.S. consulates in several different cities, in St. Petersburg and other cities, and a recreational compound.
And country singer Thomas Rhett has a hit song from his new CD. It's all ahead. The Pentagon says North Korea launched another ballistic missile Friday, the second such launch in just a few weeks. Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe said the missile may have landed in Japan's exclusive economic zone, and he convened an emergency meeting of Japanese officials to respond to the launch. I'm joined by VOA White House correspondent Steve Herman. Steve, of course, covered Asia for us for many years and has lived in Japan for a long time. Steve, what is known so far about this launch?
Well, this could be very significant. This could be the longest flight that North Korea has had with its most advanced missile. Preliminary indications we're getting from the Japanese and the South Koreans is that it reached an altitude of 3,000 kilometers and was in the air for about 45 minutes.
And what about the timing of this?
Well, it is tied to an anniversary. We just had the 64th anniversary of the signing of the armistice, which I should stress caused a long ceasefire in the Korean War, 64 years, but it never led to a peace treaty. And the first ICBM that the North Koreans launched was timed for July 4th, a very significant holiday here in the United States. And at that time, Kim Jong-un, the leader of North Korea, said he was going to be presenting gifts to the United States from now on, big and small.
Yeah, and I believe earlier this week there was some speculation a missile was going to happen on Thursday, and yet it happened today.
Right. Obviously, intelligence agencies start to pick up preparations, and they're not able to specify exactly when based on the data that they get. But I think also what's significant about this one is it was launched from a site in northern North Korea that we haven't seen used before. And also the time, it was about 11:45, around midnight on the Korean Peninsula. And usually we see these launches at 5 or 6 a.m. So I think they're trying to demonstrate operational versatility here.
What has the reaction been from, well, Japan, we heard a little bit, and also South Korea?
The Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe convened an emergency meeting of his National Security Council. He was quite angry, said this cannot be tolerated, and it demonstrates a severe threat to Japan, and he called on all the major countries that have been involved in negotiations in the past with North Korea to take further action. And but I think both Seoul and Tokyo are in a bit of a bind, because really what can they do beyond the sanctions that have already been applied? And we're awaiting a reaction from the administration here. The president is on Air Force One flying to New York right now, and we expect that Sarah Huckabee Sanders will speak to reporters on the plane.
Any reaction yet from China?
We haven't had any reaction yet. Again, it's very early in the morning in Asia, and they'll probably comment on perhaps later in the day, but Friday afternoon here, and we're going into the weekend in the capitals in Asia.
All right. Thanks very much, Steve. That's VOA White House correspondent Steve Herman. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Doug Bernard. So, Doug, what's trending?
Well, I think the North Korea story is still, it's obviously breaking. It's still developing. Clearly, a lot of news organizations are leading with it, but you don't see much play about that on social media yet. And I think it's just too early for that to really be kind of getting in roots, although I do expect over the weekend more and more people will be talking about that. The biggest trending item today, or hashtag today, at least here in the United States, is hashtag mooch. M-O-O-C-H. Now, just a little bit of background. Mooch is the nickname that a lot of people have given Anthony Scaramucci, who is the incoming communications director for Donald Trump. Now, very briefly, he gave a interview, a phone interview, lasted about a half hour with The New Yorker's Ryan Lizza late on Wednesday. And this is not a political statement, but it's really a bonkers interview. It is laced with profanity. He excoriates his colleagues, and even he's not officially on staff yet, even, but he really takes a hammer and tongs to people he sees as his opponents. He's clearly trying to bully the reporter. Very unusual. So hashtag Mooch is big right now. I'm just going to read a couple of these. Lady Deplorable writes, "How can you not love hashtag Mooch? He's a pit bull working to make America great again, or MAGA." Pink about it. "I'm okay if Trump's man has colorful language because most Americans feel the same way about the swamp," referring to Washington. Here's one. "This government is being run by a bunch of middle school boys." And one more quick one. "They're obsessed with Mueller and leakers." That's Robert Mueller, the special counsel. "Because when you've committed treason, your biggest threats are investigations." Hashtag Mooch. So if you want to see some of the discussions going on here in the United States, on Twitter or other social media, that's a good hashtag to start.
It sounds like it. I still can't get over that Twitter handle, Lady Deplorable.
Yeah.
Kind of interesting. All right. Well, thanks a lot, Doug. That's social media editor Doug Bernard. Here are some of the top news stories trending. Democrats praise Republican Senator John McCain after the Senate fails to repeal Obamacare. The U.S. economic growth accelerates, hits 2.6%. Venezuela's opposition forces escalate, protest calls, and the Rwandan president heads towards re-election in an August vote. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
An international team of astronomers have discovered an exoplanet they say is hotter than most stars. Called Kalt 9b, it is a gas giant planet that has 2.8 times more mass than Jupiter, but only has half its density. The enormous planet is tidally locked with its sun. This means that it has a permanent day and night side. The astronomers found the day side of Kalt 9b has a peak temperature of a little more than 4,300 degrees Celsius, which is only about 2,000 degrees cooler than our own sun. The planet orbits close to its sun, which the astronomers say is more than twice as large and about twice as hot as our sun. Kalt 9b receives so much ultraviolet radiation from its sun that astronomers think it may be vaporizing. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, Pakistan's prime minister steps down over corruption charges. Russia's foreign ministry said Friday it's imposing countermeasures on the U.S. in response to new sanctions approved Thursday by Congress. The ministry said the sanctions confirmed the extreme aggression of the U.S. in international affairs. Moscow told the U.S. it would need to reduce its diplomatic staff to 455, and the move must be completed by the end of August. I spoke with VOA State Department correspondent Cindy Sain about the Russian order.
We have had a response from the U.S. ambassador to Russia, Ambassador John Teft, who said he was very disappointed by the move and expressed his strong disappointment and protest, and sent back that notification back to the State Department here in Washington for review. So it's, as you said, Russia acting, and as usual in this case, kind of a tit for tat, saying that the U.S. would have to cut its diplomatic staff to the same number that Russia has in the U.S. And this is the way that Russia typically reacts. It kind of responds in kind.
Now, apparently the new U.S. sanctions are, it's to do with Russia's 2014 annexation of Crimea and also alleged interference in the U.S. election. However, we should note, you know, the Obama administration earlier ordered the seizure of two Russian diplomatic compounds and expelled 35 Russian diplomats. And that was in response to alleged hacking of the U.S. Democratic Party and Hillary Clinton's campaign. So, this has been done by U.S. officials as well.
Yes, that's right. And when the Obama administration, in its last sort of outgoing days, seized those two compounds, which angered the Russians held off and didn't respond, I think in the hope that perhaps under the new incoming Trump administration that they would get the compounds back. And now President Putin seems to be angered that he's not getting them back. And what's different and interesting about these sanctions, which passed overwhelmingly through both the House and the Senate, is that they specifically tie President Trump's hands and do not let him suspend any new or existing sanctions. In other words, he would have to go to Congress if he wanted to suspend any sanctions against Russia, and lawmakers could actually prevent him from doing so. So this is what is different. And this, of course, comes amid the backdrop, as you said, of ongoing investigations, congressional investigations, and a special counsel investigation into reports of possible collusion between the Trump administration and Russia in the U.S. election.
And it is a Republican-led Congress.
Yes, that's right. That's right. So, of course, we should mention that these sanctions also target Iran and North Korea, which the White House is quite happy about. But we understand that the White House did lobby, especially in the House, to not have these, not have the president's hands tied. No president wants his hands tied on, you know, using sanctions as leverage. But Congress has acted and rather strongly.
Under the new sanctions, Russia said it would also block the U.S. Embassy in Russia from accessing its warehouses in Moscow, as well as a vacation compound within Russia.
Yes, it affects U.S. consulates in several different cities, in St. Petersburg and other cities, and a recreational compound. And I have spoken to some analysts before who were concerned that the Russians might even target an international school where U.S. diplomats send their children, but they did not go as far to do that. But there are several different, as you said, different American facilities which are being targeted.
That's VOA State Department correspondent Cindy Sain. Pakistan's Supreme Court has disqualified Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif from holding public office and ordered him to step down immediately. A spokesman for the Prime Minister's office announced shortly after the court issued its ruling that Sharif accepted the court's decision despite his serious reservations and relinquished charge of office. I spoke with reporter Ayaz Ghul in Islamabad about Sharif's resignation.
Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif, you know, he has ruled the country. This was the third time that he was in power. So every time he was in power, there had been allegations of corruption against his government, his family. But things were really not out of control until recently when, and in fact, until last year when the leaked documents known as Panama Papers hit the media. And that's where it was disclosed for the first time that Nawaz Sharif's two sons and his daughter, they were also listed as holder of expensive property and offshore accounts. So since then, the opposition parties, particularly the political party of opposition leader Imran Khan, has been agitating on the streets and has been approaching the legal system to really investigate the truth behind the Panama Paper leak details. So that's when the court started hearing these cases. And it took like a year and a half for the Supreme Court judges to reach to this day when the five-member panel of the judges unanimously declared and found Nawaz Sharif guilty of concealing his overseas assets and wealth and living beyond his means. And there was enough evidence for the court to come up with this judgment. And that is why Nawaz Sharif had no option but to step down in the face of these strong evidences that were presented in the court against him.
Now, he relinquished office, although apparently his spokesman said that he had serious reservations about this.
Well, that is more or less a political statement on their part, because they have to say something for face saving, because now, obviously, after 8 months, there are going to be new elections in Pakistan. So in order to make sure that the party, the current ruling party, is able to go to its voters and ask for votes again, they have to say something. But the unanimous judicial verdict that was announced today has left no room in declaring that not only Nawaz Sharif, but his family members were involved in massive corruption. And that is why the court today, in its final ruling, said that based on the evidence, they have come to the conclusion that Nawaz Sharif has not been honest to the parliament and to the court and not truthful. So that is why he's being disqualified from the parliament. So that is such a strong verdict from the judiciary that only a political statement can be made. But if they really had serious reservations and problems and they had questions about the judicial process, instead they would have gone and petitioned the court against this verdict for a review.
Who is seen as a likely successor to Mr. Sharif as prime minister?
Well, hours after today's verdict, the ex-prime minister now chaired a meeting of his close aides and party leaders, and obviously consultations are on, but it is very difficult to speculate on who is going to be his successor for the next 8 months, because this government has to complete its 5 years, and that is due in June next year. So by that time, whoever takes over will be pushing the system to go ahead, but will have no real meaning as a leader of this country to take serious decisions.
Ayaz Ghul reporting from the Pakistani capital, Islamabad. This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our 5-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
This is International Edition. From Shania Twain to Kelsey Ballerini and Old Dominion, country music fans are always looking forward to new music from their favorite artists. This week, the internet is abuzz with the anticipated release of Thomas Rhett's new CD, Life Changes. Nikki Strong of VOA One is here to give us the details. So, Nikki, the title of the album is Life Changes. Can we assume Thomas Rhett is referencing his expanding family?
Yes, I think it's very safe to make that assumption. He and his wife recently adopted their daughter, Willa Gray, from Uganda in May. Now, this is wild because around the same time as they were going through the adoption process, they found out they were pregnant.
Oh, wow.
With their second daughter. So it's like a double blessing. And she will be born, like, in a couple of weeks, like August 8th. So she's coming. She's like, hello, I'm getting ready to come to the world. And then his new CD, interestingly enough, will be delivered 1 month later, September the 8th. And a lot of talk around the CD is that it is very autobiographical. He wrote about 10 of the 14 tracks, and it chronicles his life from his carefree college experiences to marrying his childhood sweetheart, becoming a country star, and his reflections on becoming a father-to-be.
What can we expect musically on Life Changes?
Well, he describes it as very diverse, but to me, I've come to expect diversity from Thomas Rhett in general. It has a 90s country throwback track featuring his father, singer-songwriter Rhett Akins, called Drink a Little Beer. He also has an EDM-influenced track called Leave Right Now. He also pulls from R&B, soul, and rock. He specifically refers to his track Renegades as his quote-unquote inner Tom Petty. And he also explains his song 16 as Merle Haggard, the iconic Merle Haggard, meets Eric Church, another big contemporary country artist, meets Corey Smith, who has, like, I really like Corey Smith. He has, like, a folk country rock kind of feel to him. He says he wants people from different genres to be able to listen to his CD and say, hey, I never really listened to country music, but, you know, this record gets me open. And I will add that fans will be happy to know that the songwriters who, along with Rhett, wrote his smash hit Die a Happy Man, that they have come together again. Sean Douglas and Joe Sparker have teamed up for another track on his new CD that's called Sweetheart.
Well, aside from his father, Rhett Atkins, does he have any other guest artists?
Actually, just Maren Morris, who is on his current single, Craving You, which hit number one on the Billboard U.S. Country Airplay and Canada Country Charts. So I think it's fair to say he is entering the next season of his career on a personal and professional high.
Certainly sounds like it. You can hear music from Thomas Rhett on VOA One's Country Hits with Nikki Strong. You can also reach Nikki on Facebook and Twitter at VOA One The Hits. Thanks, Nikki.
You're welcome. You're like that cigarette, that shot of 100 proof. No matter how much I get, I'm always craving that feeling when we kiss, the way your body moves. No matter how much I get, I'm always craving.
And that is our show. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us. Have a great weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
North Korea's nuclear weapons and missile program is today one of the most serious threats to the world as a whole. North Korea has threatened its neighbors and flouted United Nations resolutions. North Korea's test of an intercontinental ballistic missile, or ICBM, on July 4th was a major escalation. Kim Jong-un's resolve to achieve a nuclear-tipped ballistic missile capable of reaching the United States mainland constitutes a serious escalation of North Korea's nuclear and ballistic missile program. The threat posed by North Korea is not new, having challenged five previous administrations, said State Department Acting Assistant Secretary for East Asian and Pacific Affairs Susan Thornton. From long experience, we know that North Korea has no intention of abandoning its nuclear program in the current environment. But increasing economic and diplomatic pressure may work, particularly since Kim Jong-un's regime has never faced a sustained period of intense international pressure. We will change that, working with international partners wherever possible. But we will not hesitate to act unilaterally against those who enable North Korea's pursuit of strategic nuclear capabilities. Based on these experiences, we have developed a three-pronged strategy, said Acting Assistant Secretary Thornton. First, we've called on all UN member states to fully implement the commitments they made regarding North Korea. Second, we've urged countries to suspend or downgrade diplomatic relations with North Korea. And finally, we asked all countries to cut trade ties with Pyongyang to increase North Korea's financial isolation. We have relentlessly implemented this policy, said Acting Assistant Secretary Thornton. From Mali to Malaysia, we have made clear that applying greater pressure on North Korea is not only a talking point. It is an area where we expect continuing cooperation as a basis for strong bilateral relations. Crucial to the success of our strategy is our trilateral cooperation with Japan and South Korea, as is China's growing but uneven pressure, particularly economic pressure on North Korea. Together, these actions all send a clear message to the international community. If you attempt to evade sanctions and conduct business with designated North Korean entities, you will pay a price, said Acting Assistant Secretary Thornton. We will continue to fully exercise all of our standing sanctions authorities to choke off revenue streams to North Korea.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.